Chapter 4. Dialectica. 800.M30. Locos, Olympia. There came a day when the tyrant prince Adophis from Cardis visited Damocos of Locos. Damocos wished to discuss alliance with his fellow ruler. Adophos had no intention of entering into any alliance, but the boy Perturabo's repute had spread. Wanting to see the prodigy of Locos himself, Adophis had accepted Damocos's invitation. He and Damocos sat in matching thrones in the great library of Locos. By that time, Perturabo had been with Damocos a year and had grown greatly. Already he was the size of a youth in the last stages of childhood. In truth, he was only 7 years old, though it would be a few more years before Perturabo calculated his actual age. For the entertainment of Adophis, he sat surrounded by a circle of learned men from both Cardis and Locos, drawing quickly upon an easel with a steel-nibbed pen and ink. The year was hot, and the two tyrants sat surrounded by frames carrying wet sheets chilled by snow brought down from the mountaintops. Peons, the spoils of Olympia's endless wars, wafted air cooled by the sheets over them with fans made of stonehawk feathers. Golden bowls piled with delicacies were situated at their sides. More slaves bearing tall amphorae of wine waited to refresh them. Adophis drank freely. It was among his many boastful claims that he could keep his wits when other men had drunk theirs away. Damocos sipped sparingly and nibbled at an apple, making it last an uncommonly long time.
"Among Perturabo's many feats, I have a few favourites," said Damocos conversationally. "Did you know he learned the entirety of Herastor of Ephyrium's Dialectica by heart in a week? All 50 volumes? He then annotated them and sent them back to Herastor."
"Really?" said Adophis. He held up his goblet for more wine. It was duly filled. Damocos nodded.
"Herastor came here himself, though he is well into his 80s and had vowed never to travel beyond the walls of Ephyrium again. Upon meeting Perturabo, he pronounced himself unimpressed. Thereafter, the two of them engaged in debate for 10 days. Herastor said he had never met with such a keen mind. He offered to teach Perturabo at his gymnasium. Perturabo declined, after which Herastor departed in ill spirits."
"A youth will never leave a home he is happy in, Damocos. He must be pushed to excel. You indulge him, I suppose."
Damocos frowned.
"Happy? I doubt that he is ever happy. He's an intense boy. No, it was his choice. You see, he declined to go because he said Herastor had nothing to teach him."
Adophis laughed loudly. The silence shivered with the noise. Many of the assembled wise men glanced at him distractedly, then turned their attention back to Perturabo's drawing. They nodded and whispered to themselves, amazed at the boy's skills.
"All part of the show," thought Adophis cynically.
He kept an eye on Perturabo's hands at all times, alive to the possibility of substitution. It was preposterous to think that this hulking man was a boy. The whole thing was a hoax, and Adophis was angry at the wasted visit.
"Herastor is a pompous ideologue. I'm glad his ego took a nudge," said Adophis. "But it was not just Herastor," said Damocos. "Demonius, Adracastor, Heplon, every one of the 9 sophists of Pelicontia." "Well,"
he touched Adophis's arm gently,
"I exaggerate. It was those of the 9 that condescended to meet him. Your Antibus was one that declined to come. I can't speak for him, but personally I think the others are afraid of Perturabo. I apologize that I have no mind of such quality to demonstrate Perturabo's thinking in the Battle of Wits. Wise men who are willing to stake their reputations on debate with him are becoming harder to find," he said, with transparently false regretfulness.
"A pity," said Adophis, with an equal lack of sincerity. He refused to be distracted, and kept his eyes and thoughts fixed on the boy.
"Oh, don't worry. I managed to find someone. A priest of Feralkis. Priests give good sport. they have such a sense of rectitude.
What kind of name is Perturabo anyway? Said Adophus. It's not Olympian. It's unseemly.
Well, who knows what names the gods give their gifts, said Damocles.
Don't spin me that yarn, Damocles, said Adophus. If you genuinely believe him to be a gift from the heights of Mount Telephus, I'll give you the damn key to the great gates of Cardis myself.
Damocles shrugged and took another mouse-like bite of his apple.
The boy claims it is a name from old Earth itself.
Another myth, said Adophus. I'd be careful. He could be a spy. A vanguard of the Black Judges, maybe. My soothsayers say we are overdue a tribute visit.
He is not of their make, I think. I believe that is...
he said, motioning at the boy.
I see he is done.
Perturabo stood back from his work and examined it closely for a moment. Finding it satisfactory, he took it from its easel and brought it to the two lords, the back of the paper held towards the tyrant and the prince. Adophus shifted uncomfortably under the scrutiny of the boy's ice-blue eyes.
Go on then, Perturabo, my boy. Show our guest your work. Don't keep him waiting, said Damocles.
Perturabo flipped the sheet so that Adophus could see the drawing on the other side. The prince leaned forwards in amazement. There was a perfect likeness of his own face, drawn in tight, cross-hatched lines of ink. It was art in a style he had never seen before, but which captured him uncannily. It would have taken a skilled artist, a genius, hours to do the same. A cold shiver ran down his back.
I do not believe it, he said.
He glanced at Perturabo.
You did this in 10 minutes.
That is how long it took, said Perturabo.
He looked at Damocles, puzzled. You were both watching.
10 minutes, as you asked, my lord. He is rather literal-minded, I'm afraid, said Damocles apologetically. There is no trickery here. Art is but one of his many talents. Already he is showing promise as an architect and an engineer, not to mention his abstract mathematical skills. It is in rhetoric that he excels, however.
Adophus looked at Perturabo doubtfully.
He really does come into his own in debate. Give him the picture, Perturabo, said Damocles. It's a gift, Adophus.
Perturabo handed the prince the paper. Adophus tilted it from left to right.
The ink glistens. It's still wet.
How was this done? Tell me, Damocles, and I may forgive you for tricking me. The deception is a marvel. You may count me satisfied if you reveal your methods. I understand your suspicion, said Damocles, but I assure you that it is no trick. It was done exactly as you saw by Perturabo in these last 10 minutes. I will have him display his architectural drawings after the feast, as they are quite impressive. But I am sure this next demonstration will lay any doubt to rest that you may have regarding his intellectual ability.
Damocles clapped his hands.
Bring in the priest!
Perturabo took his leave without asking permission. Though he was a man in appearance, he sauntered back to his chair with the awkward, insolent gait of an adolescent. The easel was whisked away. A moment later, a man with the flowing hair and multicoloured cloak of the Feralkian cult was brought in. He held his right arm up, the cloak folded over it decorously. He bowed to the tyrants.
My lords, he said, I am the priest Rodask of Byzelion.
You are here to debate with the boy, said Adophus.
No, my lord, said Rodask confidently. I am here to convince him of the existence of the gods.
Adophus' mouth quirked into a harsh smile.
A gift of the gods who does not believe in the gods. How droll, Damocles.
By all means begin, said Damocles to the priest.
He looked knowingly at Adophus and settled back into his chair.
Rodask gave the crowd a beaming smile, the sort worn by men who are certain they have stumbled upon the singular truth of the universe.
You are the one called Perturabo, he said.
Rodask paced back and forth as he spoke, his arm held before him, the folds of his multicoloured cloak swaying.
"I am," said the youth.
"I hear it said you state there are no gods."
Perturabo shook his head.
"I said that I have no proof that there are gods. That is not a statement of fact, it is a hypothesis."
"Do you admit you disregard the divine in saying so?"
"I do no such thing," said Perturabo.
His voice was still high but assured.
"I merely test your assumption that there are gods. If there are gods, then I will prove it to be so by testing this hypothesis, along with any other hypotheses that might arise from it by dint of a progression in sophistication of my theorizing. Surely any god, if he exists, would be pleased by such effort. If they do exist, I shall take myself to their presence by climbing Mount Telephus, where I shall bow to them. If they do not exist, well, there is nothing to offend."
The crowd found this amusing. Perturabo scowled at them. He had not intended to be funny.
"The existence of the gods is self-substantiating," said the priest softly. "They require no proof. Their evidence is present all around us, in the stone of the ground, in the patterns of the rain, in the rising of the sun. What of yourself?"
"The things you list are evidence of the thing's existence, not of their provenance, and less so of their exact ontological status," said Perturabo. "The things you see are real. The sun, the rain, myself. That is true."
"Ha! Do you hear, believers?" the priest addressed the crowd. "Our prodigy acknowledges the work of the gods, but not the gods themselves. Consider this. A man has for sale a bolt of cloth made in a faraway land which he has never visited nor indeed heard of. It was made by the hands of a person of whom he has no knowledge, speaking a language which he could not know, in a city of whose long and complex history he is entirely ignorant. You buy this cloth because you have not met the man who made it. Does this mean the cloth does not exist?"
Perturabo shook his head.
"Your reasoning is poor."
"How so?"
said the priest, his face a picture of open, holy innocence.
"It is correct to assume that a bolt of cloth is made by a human agent, because all bolts of cloth we might come across are made by human beings. Ergo, it is reasonable that all bolts of cloth are made by people, and not, say, talking Leonids."
The crowd laughed again. Perturabo found the reaction less offensive this time.
"Our cloth has been carried from trader to trader," he continued, "and at some point a human agent bought the cloth from another human agent. Therefore, the existence of the initial manufacturer can ultimately be proven."
"So, by extension, the rain is real, the sun is real, you are real, so the gods are real," said the priest.
The crowd murmured appreciatively.
"It is fallacious to carry that assumption to the rain," said Perturabo, "and say that supernatural entities are responsible. The first object, the rain, is produced by processes unknown to us, though I suspect that it is owing to the action of the sun upon the sea and the condensation of the vapours produced therefrom in the atmosphere. The latter, the gods, are unknowable. We might well believe a man who met a man who bought cloth in a city we do not personally know is telling the truth. It is another matter entirely to believe a man who says a man he knows knew a man who met a god. I could, should I wish, retrace the steps of the bolt of cloth to its point of origin. I might even find the man who made it. Our nature dictates our curiosity. It is in our nature to invent a story for our bolt of cloth, but all such suppositions are, to a lesser or greater degree, verifiable. Similarly, you tell stories of the gods to make sense of the patterns you see. That is commendable, but they cannot be proved. Religion is not a rigorous discipline. Myths are not verifiable, therefore they are flawed."
"We are rigorous in our worship," said the priest.
"But not in your thinking," replied Perturabo.
"The better way would not be to impute divine origin for the world around you. It is one possibility among several.
What is the truth, then? What is the truth of the sun?
I have yet to determine it exactly, said Perturabo. However, in this library I have read many older texts.
Blasphemous texts,
interrupted the priest. Older texts, asserted Perturabo calmly, that state the sun is a star, akin to the other stars in the skies, which are themselves suns made small by distance. My own calculations have proven these writings to be correct.
And what did you base these calculations upon?
Said the priest with a sneer.
The formulae of Denivor Astrakhan, said Perturabo.
Those are calculations intended to give correct proportions according to the laws of perspective, said the priest. An artist's tools.
The tools of art and science are the same. Everything is part of one whole. The thinking of Olympia is imperfect in that it is divisive. Your philosophers are preoccupied with classification. Classification imposes divisions on the whole that is the physical and metaphysical world. These divisions are artificial and unhelpful. The tool becomes the determiner of the nature of a thing, thus preventing knowledge of the thing itself.
And you, said the priest, you are surely proof of the gods. There is no other like you. You were born of no human mother.
I believe you are correct, said Perturabo. I have become convinced that I am the product of design, not of nature. My abilities are too many, my difference from other men too profound for it to be any other way.
Yet you insist the gods did not make you. Who did?
I am a bolt of cloth, said Perturabo. One day I will find the one who wove me. I am certain that he, or she, was no god.
Such things are beyond men,
said the priest incredulously.
Once they were not, said Perturabo.
Listening to the exchange, Adophas leaned in to Damocles and softly whispered,
How old did you say he was?
Rumours of him came to Lokos 2 years ago, replied Damocles, as Perturabo carried on speaking. There was nothing before that. I suspect he is no more than a handful of years old.
Impossible, said Adophas, looking at the rangy, hard-muscled young man.
Everything about this boy is impossible, said Damocles.
Watch.
The priest had by now become a little less composed.
Your arguments are blasphemous,
he was saying.
Do you not fear for your soul?
If I have a soul, said Perturabo, that is another thing I can neither touch nor see, another unverifiable object taken as an article of faith. That is a debate for another day. I have nothing to fear. My reading of your histories show that all punishments for blasphemy have been meted out by men and not the gods, those in the Mythica aside, and it cannot be trusted. I thus deduce with complete confidence that no divine being will reach out to smite me.
The faithful will punish you,
said the priest, his beatific attitude slipping further.
Perturabo cocked an eyebrow. Again, the action of men, not gods, and I defy any man to dare.
He will bring doom on Locus,
said the priest, directly to the crowd.
Famine! War! These will be the fruits of this poison tree!
You act as demagogue now. That is a defining characteristic of a man in the wrong. If there is to be famine, it will be because of multiple interrelated factors coming together to produce the inevitable outcome of hunger. The weather, poor farming techniques, the skewing of the amount of land under tillage by economic considerations, the dispossession of the poor by the avarice of the rich, not because I angered a being who does not exist.
You say your blasphemy is a hypothesis, said the priest. You swing towards certainty without proof.
Perturabo smiled coldly, an expression far too old and reptilian for his youthful face.
I have the courage of my convictions. I do not yet know I am right, but I am certain I will not be punished, and you will look foolish.
The crowd laughed. The priest became angry. Perturabo thought for a moment.
You cannot be blamed for your ignorance. Allow me a metaphor. Imagine a cave wherein men are imprisoned throughout their lives. They are chained to a wall, unable to see the mouth of the cave. But they face another wall that does face the entrance. A fire burns at the mouth of this cave day and night. Shadows are cast by the things of the wider world that pass to and fro in front of the cave. These shadows are cast upon the wall and viewed by the imprisoned men.
I do not see how this relates to the gods,
interrupted the priest. Listen, and I will illuminate you. You deal in stories, so I am telling you one. Again the crowd laughed. Perturabo smiled at his effect on them, for he had intended to be humorous and was beginning to enjoy their laughter, so long as it was not directed at him. The shadows are all the prisoners see. They give them names and they guess at their nature. The shadows are their world. The objects that cast the shadows are real, as is the light, but the true nature of either thing cannot be inferred from the shadows. Nevertheless, they exist, though the prisoners are in ignorance of them. This is the state you are in. You see part of something real, the shadow, and infer what you can about its essence. In your case, it is the gods. Then one day a single prisoner is taken from the cave, continued Perturabo. He sees the fire. It hurts his eyes. He cannot see the objects clearly for the pain, and they are but silhouettes against the blaze. But he is told that these articles are the reality of the objects he has seen, and the shadows only a byproduct of their actuality. But because he cannot perceive the solid objects, his eyes hurt, the fire dazzles, and he has little frame of reference for what he sees, he does not believe what he is told. All he sees is their blackness against the firelight. To save himself from agony, he turns back to what he knows and flees into the cave. His pain gone, and having seen the fire, he perceives the shadows more clearly than before and regards their truth to be absolute. He knows a little of the true nature of things now, but dare not probe further for fear of the pain. In this way, a little truth is worse than none. But imagine the prisoner is dragged bodily from the cave once more, and now up into the light of the full sun. There he suffers untold agonies until slowly, at first, his eyes adjust to the day. He then sees solid objects and the shadows they cast. Finally, he understands the true nature of shadows and that there must be three things to enable him to see: himself, the object, and light. See how far he has come from the shadows. Eventually, he can look up into the sky and maybe also at the very sun. Only then can he contemplate the nature of the world beyond. He realizes that the world is another cave, and the sun another fire, and if he wishes to learn more, he must travel further. The audience listened in silence. Adolphus was spellbound. Even the priest had ceased his bluster. Perturabo had not finished. "But you cannot learn from this," he said to the priest.
"How so?"
asked the priest.
"Because you are one of the prisoners still within the cave."
Gripped with excitement, the man rushes back into the cave to tell his fellows of the truth of the world. But his eyes are now adapted to the day, and he can no longer see the shadows that entrance his fellows still. They, lacking any other point of reference, regard his revelations of the truth as madness, and his blindness to their shadows an affliction. Thus they deem the outside world as harmful. They kill the man to stop his madness, and they resolve to destroy any other person that would remove them from the cave. Perturabo's face darkened. "And so you priests inflict death on those who disagree with you, in order to preserve your comforting ignorance." Gasps ran through the crowd, some of them appreciative, others horrified.
"You arrogant youth," said the priest. "I see what you are doing. You want to turn the city against the gods by setting yourself as this man who knows the truth."
That was not his intention, murmured Damocles at this accusation. He toyed with his ring of office. Adolphus frowned at him, but the tyrant had forgotten his guest for the moment.
"You are mistaken. I am not the man. I am the sun," said Perturabo.
"I will burn your eyes until you see. I am the truth."
"You are wrong. The gods will punish you."
The priest advanced on the youth.
"You will bring disaster upon this place, and if you persist upon the whole world.
Mark my words. Let it be recorded that I, Rodask of Byzillion, foretold this.
Guards came to Rodask's side and took his elbows. Perturabo glared at him.
I invite you to prove it, he said.
The priest was dragged from the hall, shouting,
I have the gift of sight! The gods bless me! Do not listen to him!
He yelled. His shouts faded and were cut off by the closing of the great doors to the library. Perturabo stood and gave his audience a defiant stare. A patter of polite applause quickly died. Adophas let out a long breath.
Clever arguments are all very well, Damocos, but prodigies do not seal alliances. I have seen what I came to see. I am impressed, but there will not be an alliance between our cities.
No,
said Damocos mildly.
Well, then, a final demonstration for you? Tell me, who is the mightiest warrior in your entourage?
What?
You heard my question. Who is the best killer you have?
You know full well that the champion, Ortraxes Falk, is my personal guardian. He is the mightiest.
We shall have him fight, Perturabo, said Damocos.
Have you lost your wits? Snorted Adophas. Ortraxes is the best warrior in Pelicotonia.
I am aware of this. As aware of it, in fact, as you were aware that others have tested Perturabo's strength in a similar way.
He had finished his apple by now and popped a candied cherry into his mouth.
You brought Ortraxes with you for exactly that reason.
Adophas gripped his chair and grinned.
He will destroy your prodigy.
What a waste. I'm disappointed. This is not the wisdom I would have expected from the great Damocos.
I had expected you to back down when you discovered Ortraxes was in my party.
Why should I? You shall see. A wager, perhaps.
Damocos leaned towards his fellow ruler conspiratorially.
If Perturabo wins, then you will accede to my terms of alliance and open trade between our cities. If he fails, you will be free to refuse. Isn't that what you want?
You have to do better than that.
Adophas thought a moment.
You will make no further attempts at alliance while I am on the throne, and you will provide our city with 40 pounds of silver every year.
Done,
said Damocos easily.
No bargaining, said Adophas.
None,
replied Damocos somewhat smugly.
Now I know you have lost your wits. I will not have the boy killed. He is too talented. Perhaps he might be convinced to come to Cardis by your lack of care for him.
Damocos shrugged.
We shall see if he is killed. You will not sway him. He knows what is expected. Shall we proceed with the bout?
Adophas drained his cup again.
If you insist, he said angrily.
Ortraxes!
Ortraxes ploughed his way through Damocos's courtiers without apology. Very few of them needed encouragement to clear his path. Ortraxes was enormous for an Olympian, over 2 meters tall. Unlike some men of unusual stature who trade power for height, his limbs and torso bulged with muscle. He wore a modified version of the armor worn by Adophas's guards, with a livery of blue-stained leather and bronze. His breastplate was heavily embellished with relief work, the leather of his kilt carved intricately. His eyes were rimmed in kohl, and the well-oiled rings of his beard cascaded over his bulging chest in the Selenian style. Under one arm, he carried a tall crested helm.
My lord, he said in a voice deeper than the oubliettes of Locus.
My lord Damocos wishes you to fight the prodigy, said Adophas.
Ortraxes turned to look at Perturabo. His war gear creaked like the too small harness of a draft beast.
The boy, he said.
Perturabo glowered at him from under his broad forehead.
If you can, do not hurt him.
Much,
said Adophas gleefully, for he could see nothing but an easy victory ahead, with much benefit for his city, not least the humbling of the tyrant of Locus.
He is too great a talent to waste.
No, no, make no special allowances on Perturabo's part,
said Damocos airily. Ortraxes looked from the boy to his lord and back.
Very well,
said Adophas. Kill him. Ortraxes considered for a moment, then put on his helmet. The best warriors spurn overconfidence, and he was among the very best.
As you wish, he said,
drawing his sword with an oily rasp.
You will give no weapon to the boy, said Adolphus.
Damocus put his hand to cover his mouth in mock secrecy.
He doesn't need one,
he said in a stage whisper. The first flickers of doubt crossed Adolphus's face. Ortraxes made a false move towards Perturabo, making as if to charge. Perturabo didn't move a muscle. Ortraxes made another display, holding out his arms and half-lunging. The boy looked unimpressed. Ortraxes chuckled appreciatively. Then he did charge. Almost too quickly to see, Perturabo sidestepped the giant man, tripping him with a foot and grabbing his backplate. With a hefty shove, he propelled the man forwards into a column. Ortraxes' helm rang like a bell. He staggered back upright, pulled his dented helmet off and threw it down. Perturabo could have pressed the advantage, but he paced the growing circle in the crowd and waited for his foe to recover. Ortraxes hefted his weapon, shook his head, and prepared to attack again. Perturabo stamped hard on his chair, shattering it, and plucked up a stave from the frame.
He will fight Ortraxes with part of a chair, said Adolphus incredulously.
He must feel threatened, said Damocos. He beat all my warriors barehanded.
Ortraxes roared and came for Perturabo. Despite his great size, Ortraxes was nimble and handled his sword expertly. He and Perturabo traded blows, the youth parrying the sword with his wooden stick. Twice he rapped Ortraxes hard on the side of the head. Splinters flew everywhere as the giant warrior struck again at the youth. The sword chopped through the wood, and Perturabo cast it away. He bent forwards into a restless crouch.
"Do you know we have taught him none of this?" said Damocos,
unconcerned by his favourite engaging in combat, unarmed and unarmoured, against a man half his height again.
"His abilities are entirely innate."
Adolphus wasn't listening. The boy was humiliating his finest warrior, and by extent the tyrant prince himself. His jaw was clenched.
"Finish him, Ortraxes!" he shouted.
Perturabo swatted at Ortraxes's hand, sending the Cardian sword spinning from his grasp, and jumped at him. The giant and Perturabo grappled. Ortraxes was enraged and had abandoned any attempt to hold himself back. He smashed his elbow across Perturabo's nose, breaking it with a wet crack. The youth was not bowed, and the flow of blood stopped almost immediately. Perturabo grabbed Ortraxes's wrist as he swung a club-like fist at his head. The champion of Cardis growled like a provoked Leonid, but he could not overcome the boy's strength. His muscles bulged, his skin went red with the effort. Slowly his grasping hand descended, until as the fingers brushed the bridge of Perturabo's swelling nose, the youth twisted, yanked hard, and sent Ortraxes crashing into the ground. The giant rolled over with impressive speed, but Perturabo's foot descended to meet him, breaking Ortraxes's nose in return and knocking him out cold. Perturabo dropped to his knees and drew back his fist to finish the job with a blow to the throat.
"Enough!"
shouted Damocos, his voice a little strained. Perturabo nodded and stepped back. Absent-mindedly, he re-broke his already set nose and pushed it back into place.
"By the gods," said Adolphus.
"I saw Perturabo as a gift from the gods," said Damocos, his light manner gone. "But as he tells it, there are no such things." "Come forward, Perturabo," he said, beckoning to his foster son.
Adolphus stood as Perturabo came to stand before the two lords.
"Here, boy, let us drink to your victory."
Adolphus held out his cup to the side. A serving girl filled it. He took a deep draught and offered it to Perturabo. Perturabo just stared at him.
"He will not drink," explained Damocos.
"Why not?"
"Because Xena of Sudalian tried to poison him with a cask of gifted wine. Alas, this and other attempts on his life have made him suspicious of others. The other tyrants are so jealous of my foster son."
Adolphus made a sour face and a noise in his throat to accompany it.
"The day a man of Olympia loses his paranoia is the day he loses his life," he said. "Then I toast your good health, young Perturabo."
He raised the cup and ostentatiously downed his wine.
Perturabo gave him a level stare.
So then, said Damocles with a triumphant smile, as Adophis's unconscious warrior was dragged away. Shall we discuss the terms of our alliance?